Atrahasis, the wise man. He was the man who built the ark and saved mankind from destruction. It's a figure of immense prestige in antiquity, you know, to whom various literary and religious traditions were all beginning to be attached. He is known by a variety of names, and he's been translated into different languages, sometimes with reinterpreted meanings, sometimes being abbreviated, and in his way, his fame spread across huge distances over a 5,000-year period. He was a survivor of the flood with his wife and was granted immortality by greater gods. The story of the flood is one of the most popular tales of ancient times. It is found in several ancient languages, reworked to suit different areas and cultures. But one thing was clear, that Enki, at that time, was with Ninhursag already, and whispered in his ear, as Enlil desired great destruction. Now, we find Enlil, as we trace forward in time, we find Enlil being El, Allah, and many other deities that all linked with the Abrahamic tradition. So we find his adoption amongst all of the tribes of Abraham, or all of the people of Abraham. But remember, Abraham, if we take their own biblical literature and look at it, Abraham came from the city of Ur. So he just didn't begot this and this and this and this. There were hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people before people had an idea, just located in the different cities that made up the land of Sumeria or Mesopotamia at the time. Some say, and these are scholars of archaeology and etc., that the entire region or that Sumerian line stretched from sea to sea in every direction. Their lands were simply attacked by Assyrians, Hittites, Elamites, and all different peoples during the time period. Excuse me. And with such attacks, the people were merged, the cities grew, the cities were destroyed, and the cities flourished. But they never flourished as much as under the Sumerian kingship. Now remember, if we take the king's list, we see that the king's list goes back thousands and thousands of more years before even any kind of mention or any type of people were walking around. And this is contrary to what people who follow the Egyptian idea talks about. According to one version of the Sumerians' king's list, in the years just before the flood, which swept over the entire earth, Ubaratutu, who was the father of Atrahasis, which was in Gilgamesh, was the king of Surupak, which is modern Tel Fara, which is in the central southern area of Mesopotamia, or today's Iraq, where some of the earliest writings known to the world have been unearthed. I find that strange, but it's okay. Some of the oldest writings on earth, predating anything from India, predating anything from China, predating anything from South America, even predating anything from Egypt. According to a different version, Atrahasis was called there by the Sumerian named Zeustra, who himself ruled the city of Shurupak, preceded by his father. In other tales, we have Zeustra being spoke to by Enki directly. So we have to figure out which period this is. Because keep in mind, over thousands of years, the story's told several different ways. No. When we see these different names, we see that Atrahasis is kind of like related in a way to Gilgamesh, but we see other things move, maneuver around where It's not related. He's not related. We see Zarathustra. And this comes into play where it's simply different archaeologists or different scholars figuring out the different types of names. Now, Utanapishtim was pronounced Noah in Palestine. So Noah, coming from the idea of Noah's Ark, is coming from a Palestinian name or an early Palestine. I know, wrap your head around that. The name Astrahasis was also used as a craftsman of Ugarthic area and the Greek account of Assyrian and Syrian, which is related to Philo of Byblos. So we see a lot of different things, and we see, you know, things becoming, people becoming immortal or things crisscrossing. But the parallel between all these different things comes down to these clay tablets. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about these clay tablets. Now, in the period of time, a lot of different things were written and scribed at different times. But we see the scribing where most of the newer tablets were created around 1700 BC. Now, when we see some of the newer tablets that are created around that time period, we see a change or a name change from Sumerian, Akkadian, to Babylonian. Now remember, for many, many years, up until just recently, the Sumerian language was unable to be translated. It was translated by using Akkadian, by using Rosetta Stone, not the Rosetta Stone Corporation, but actually the Rosetta Stone. And it was a painstaking process. So some of the things have changed, and actually some of the, you know, different writings. For an example, the Sumerian collection of the Temple of Hymns. You know, we know that that work was old, but we now find versions even older than what was found. And we see this across many different situations. We see, you know, in the creation of man, we see several different stories. We see the mother goddess Mammy and Ea, who created men out of clay and mixed the blood of a slain god called Elwela. But that actually is the Epic of Creation from early Akkadian times up until Babylon. We see the Epic of Creation where Marduk used the blood of Kingu, the evil leader of the enemy, and for the purpose of man's creation. In the account, Genesis describes God using earth to create the first man. But we find that there's strong evidence that connects Enki and then Hersag to being Adam and Eve of the garden, and the serpent being Ningishida. So we see some different parallels here, and this is almost, excuse my emboldened comment here, but this is why I find a lot of people who can't read all the different texts should not speak on Sumeria, because there's many different versions. And even with my knowledge, and I study this lengthy times during the year, I guess that really doesn't make too much sense. I study this at great length during times of the year where I have the time. I like to read still. But I find different versions existing. And these different versions could be corrupted. A lot of what early Judaism or early Hebrew teachings come into play, they actually distort the kings, the gods, and different things. And then even in modern day, you have people like Sitchin, who really was not an accredited scholar on Sumer. People are quoting him in many directions. And you'll even see me use some of his research, but keep in mind, he had other people involved in this project. He really didn't understand completely the Sumerian lore and created a whole set of lore around it. For an example, I'll give you a good example here. Miners in Africa, okay? There's no doubt that the Sumerians were mining for gold. They loved gold. But were they mining gold for spaceships? That's merely a von Däniken idea. And that's not to say anything is wrong, but this idea that they were creating these slaves, that humans were slaves for the gods, is something of just simply of atheism, to be honest with you. This corruption comes from the hand of the Hebrews, and I'm not going to single out Judaism, no ad hominem attack or anything like that, but you're just seeing that a lot of the corruption in today's archaeology, you have to read 20 different books to figure out which one may be the right direction. So I can only imagine the total corruption. For an example, the word Anunnaki. Anunnaki, if you look at it in Sumerian language or the Sumerian original language, it means council of gods. And gods were not just male. They were male and female. And this council was rather powerful. It actually was comprised of many different gods within the pantheon. And many times people go, oh, that's the Anunnaki from Planet X. Okay, no, the gods really, you know, have they been here? Yeah, they walked amongst man at one time. Did they climb their asses in some spaceship and fly out of here? I don't know. They the gods that I've ever been in contact with through natural processes and through communicative processes have never spoke of flying out in some wild-ass saucer into the sky. Only New Age authors have written about that. So, you know, it's just like one of the things when we do a deep dig into Sumerian magic. There is strong evidence that Sumerians practiced magic because they had gods of magic. However, we find only some of the written magical writings to be simply just almost like diagnoses or medical processes. So the magic that was used was more to heal than it was to harm, even though we do see some different blood cults and some blood and some human sacrifices that were involved in small scale amongst different cults that were in the different cities. But again, history has changed all that, and I'm going to talk about this in the days ahead, kind of bleed it out to purity based on the works of many, and not just the works of one. A lot of people find they will often quote their favorite author. I have no favorite author. I have many favorite authors. And I even go as far as looking for accredited authors. I'm not just trying to find authors that think they know what's going on, like most of the people who write today. I go back quite a ways. Irving Finkel, for an example, is one of my favorite professors and writes a lot of great Sumerian writings. And, you know, there's the list goes on and on. And I'm going to suggest those in an upcoming podcast, but much of what we see, and going back to the tale of the flood, people go, well, that's biblical. Yeah, no, it was way before the Bible. And if you look into Finkel, finding the actual writings of this, you'll see that the writings are on clay that predates any Abrahamic religion and explains that some of the things like the round boat and the difference of, you know, the way that these animals were brought in and et cetera, et cetera. We all know, of course, they wouldn't fit on the boat. We know that they didn't end up on Mount Ararat. I mean, there's a lot of different things that we know already. We know that the boat would have had difficulty because of the pitch, of the way pitch is extracted at the time. We know that it might be built. It was maybe built down in the area known as Basra. There's a lot of different things that we know about it based on historical studies. But to try and align with just one of those studies or try to align with people like Sitchin is really, really disingenuous. But the story of the Great Flood
originates from Sumeria. And if you think otherwise, you need to learn more history. I'll talk about this in the future editions too. Thanks again for listening, folks.